This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. This week I met city guides and church watchers Jill Finch and Tony Tucker outside one of Christopher Wren's churches that's just a stone's throw away from St Paul's Cathedral. We're on the corner of Cheapside and Foster Lane, and we're looking up at the Tower of St...
Vidast, alias Foster, because it's in Foster Lane, and Foster is a corruption of the word Vides. Over the years it became Vides, Vedas, Vada, Vastra, Voster, Foster, like that. A bit like that First World War joke about the Sergeant Major wanting to pass a message down the trenches to the General saying, send reinforcements, we're going to advance. And by the time it got down 100 men, the General got the message, send three and fourpence, we're going to advance.
And he was a 6th century bishop in the Flemish part, area of France. And his cult, if you like, came over with the Augustinian monks and also with merchants who came over from Arras in northern France.
Only two churches in England dedicated to St. Vides. The other one's in Lincolnshire. There's 600 St. Michael's and I don't know how many St. Mary's, more than that I would think, but only two St. Vides.
It's a really interesting church in many, many ways. If you look at it, you can see a couple of things that typify Wren churches. One is the rather beautiful steeple, spire and tower. And if you look right up to the top, you'll see it's quite Baroque. It's quite heavy. And it's got a concave section and then a convex section. And it's often thought that it was one of the ones that was done by Nicholas Hawksmoor.
The steeple on this church is spectacular. It's one of Wren's great steeples. Quite different from St Bride and St Mary Le Bow nearby and others. It's in Portland stone. Some of his steeples are lead, some are Portland stone. This is very Baroque. Later period, it was added to the church. What he did with a lot of churches was built the church quickly to get people back to worship. And then years later, when there was more money and time, came back and put steeples on some of the churches many, many years later, sometimes as much as 40 years after the church had been built. St. Vidast was a later church anyway. He was one of the last ones he built, but the steeple was added some years later. And it's very reminiscent of some of Borromini's designs in Rome. Hevesner says that this church may be designed by Hawksmoor. Hawksmoor worked with Wren, as did Robert Hooke, and so Wren didn't design everything himself, but there's no evidence this is by Hawksmoor at all. Hawksmoor had left Wren's office long before this steeple was made, and they say that simply because it's more Baroque than Wren's earlier steeples, but it would be more Baroque because Wren was designing for 40, 50 years, and Baroque was sweeping Europe at that time, and Wren's style changed and became more Baroque.
Also, it's kind of that top steeple bit looks very, very different to the tower. The decorative bit is clearly an addition.
And he added it later. The steeples are separate in a way from the towers. Yeah. They're all different, and you could almost change some of them around, and it would just give a different effect. But it's a lovely, lovely steeple, and it's in perfect proportions, of course, because Wren's sense of proportion is unrivalled. And the exterior, I think, is very lovely on this top end of Cheapside here. The interior also is beautifully proportioned church.
So we're now walking through this hidden door in Foster Lane. But this little blue door, I'm sure so many people walk past it not realising what a treasure is inside. This tiny little courtyard, once called Fountain Court. There was an old pub here which was pulled down to make way for the rectory, which faces onto Foster Lane. You can see the livery company coat of arms of the vintners, because when it was a pub, the Fountain, they owned this area, so the parish actually bought the land off them. But you can still see their three barrels livery company coat of arms, which tells us that they were, you know, important here. There's a wonderful tree in the middle, lots of greenery.
You've got an Acer tree in the middle, which when I first knew it a few years ago was very small. It's now taking over the centre of the courtyard, but it has lovely leaves that of course turn red in the autumn. And it's got a lot of interesting features. It's got, well, it's got the rectory up above it on one side. Lucky Rector, he has a roof garden under the steeple, and a very fine place to live.
Then you've got over in the corner, over there, you've got a head, if you like, of Canon Mortlake by the sculptor Jacob Epstein.
How come they got him to? He's such a well-known sculptor.
He was a friend of Epstein's, and he did the head. And Canon Mortlake, very, very important priest here at St. Vedast. He was the priest after World War II. Now, I've jumped a bit in history because obviously there was very possibly a Saxon church here, but there was definitely a Norman church here. It was very badly damaged during the Great Fire. Christopher Wren rebuilt it. And then, as happened with so many churches in the city, it was absolutely gutted during World War II. But I always think about this when I talk in St. Paul's Cathedral, because St. Paul's was saved partly by the fact that they had their own fire watch. And one of the members of the St. Paul's fire watch was John Betjeman, poet laureate, who was also a church warden here at St. Vedast. And I often wonder how torn he must have been helping to save St. Paul's, where his own church was completely gutted by the firestorm in December 1940. But he, Canon Mortlake, and another church warden, Noel Mander, who was the very famous organ maker, they were very, very important in rebuilding St. Vedast after World War II.
On the opposite wall, against the side of the church, you have a piece of Roman tessellated pavement which was brought from St. Matthew Friday Street, a church knocked down in Victorian time in 1886, and the parish united with this one. That Roman pavement was found beneath St. Matthew Friday Street when it was knocked down, so 2,000 years old history there. A bit of Jacob Epstein on the other side, and then over in the far corner, the south-east corner of the churchyard, is a little yellow-brown brick, unnoticed by anybody unless a guide such as ourselves pointed out to people. It's the finest example of cuneiform writing in the UK. It's a little tablet with an inscription on it, talking about some various Assyrian kings, but it comes from the temple of the ziggurat of Kalu in what today is northern Iraq, formerly Assyria, and it was found on that temple in 1954 by the archaeological group. The archaeologist leading that dig was a man called Sir Max Mallowan, and Sir Max Mallowan was the second husband of Agatha Christie, and Agatha Christie worshipped in this church. It was given by the Syrian government to the church here because of that connection that I've mentioned, which actually gives me the chance to crack my Agatha Christie joke, or to be correct, her Agatha Christie joke, which I always find quite amusing. Agatha Christie famously married for a second time Sir Max Mallowan, who was much younger than herself and was an archaeologist, and her joke was, the great thing about being married to an archaeologist is that the older you get, the more interesting he finds you. The other thing we have in this little churchyard is a wonderful plaque to Petro. Petro's real name is
Vladimir.
It's Vladimir Vasilievich Petropavlovsky.
Isn't it wonderful? Now, soldier of the Tsar of France and England, this tablet was erected by George Courthold and other friends. This was a man. Now, could you get a better memorial than
it
that?
It doesn't get better than that.
It doesn't,
and
does
who
it?
Who was this man?
Right. He was a lieutenant for the artillery group of the Russian army. He left Russia at the time of the Bolshevik Revolution, relocated in France, spent some time in London, and then went to China, where he spent most of his adult life. He married a woman called Barbara Sherman, who was the daughter of an American diplomat. And he's mentioned in something called the Historical Chinese Dictionary of Diplomacy as a collaborator with John Keswick, who had some diplomatic duties representing the UK in China. So he led a very peripatetic, cosmopolitan life. But, I mean, who could want a better memorial than this was a man?
This was a man.
This was a man. It's a wonderful epitaph, isn't it?
It is.
Although not everyone spots that it is actually a quote from Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare.
That little international courtyard, isn't it? A bit of Assyria, a bit of Rome. With
Russia and France.
And then Russia and this sort of field.
And we've got a Flemish saint
who
the church is named after.
This is probably international.
And his Wren, a great Englishman. So we got,
A bit of everything.
Entryway before we go inside. This is the church of 13 united parishes. So it's all different parishes that have, for one reason or another, over the centuries, the parishes have all been melded together. And there we've got a list of some of the church wardens. So you can see John Betjeman, Noel Mander, and you've got Canon Mortlock at the top there. And Stephen Dykes Bower was the architect who restored the church after the Second World War, and he was actually very much involved in St Paul's Cathedral as well.
So where shall we go next?
Just want to show you one more thing. Rectus boards. Always look at the rectus boards. They're really good.
That's the kind of thing most people, I think, would avoid, but I think you're going to tell me something interesting here.
Okay. So the ones I always like are what happened during the interregnum, during the time of the Commonwealth and the Civil War. So if you look at 1643... got the wonderfully named Fuchs Bellas, and underneath it says Commonwealth Intruder, because what happened was a lot of the royalist churchmen, and in particular in this church he was, are ousted, and Cromwell puts his own people in, and this happens all over city churches. So look at rectus boards next time you're in.
Yes.
Then we come down to 1847. Yeah. Thomas Pelham Dale. Now, it doesn't say it here, but he was actually put in prison for what they called ritualistic practices. So they were bringing back what seemed like Catholic values and Catholic ways into the performance of the faith. I just think it's always interesting to, you know, look at these and kind of find some, just look up some of the people. I just do, but then I'm kind of geeky that way.
The names are so interesting themselves for the most part. Jameson Chitty Charles.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, there's a funny name. And Brooke Deeds.
Yeah, like that one. John Thomas Theophilus.
Yeah, Kendall Thompson.
Marmaduke Hopkins is a pretty good one as well. We like him.
They've got some good names.
So here we are in the main body of the church, and what Stephen Dykes Bower did after the war, he rebuilt the church for a much smaller congregation. So he did it in collegiate style. So what you've got are the pews on the north and south walls facing each other, rather than, you know, facing down to the altar at the east. Also, the ceiling has been done as almost a replica of the ceiling that was here before, and it was done with money given by the goldsmiths company, the livery company here in the city.
They're only up the road.
Their hall is literally a few minutes away. But also you've got the stained glass. Now, this stained glass, this is by an artist called Brian Thomas, and what you're getting here is stories from the life of St Vedast. As we're looking at the reredos and the altar, to our left, we've got the stained glass window showing King Clovis of France and his wife, Queen Clotilde. Queen Clotilde was a Christian in 7th century France, and she persuaded her husband to convert to Christianity, and Vedast was the man who christened him. So he became a bishop, and eventually his cult came over to this country. Then you've got a couple of kind of stories in the middle piece of stained glass. At the top, you've got him curing a blind beggar, and you've got Clovis on his horse seeing him, which is one of the things that kind of impresses him about St. Vedast. And then at the bottom here, you've got him with a bear, and the idea is that he threw the bears out of the monasteries. They'd kind of taken over the churches and the monasteries, so he was clearing everything up.
Poor bears.
Yes. Let's go and have a look at the pulpit.
The font and the font cover.
The font is right in the middle of the nave. Yeah.
That actually came from St. Anne and St. Agnes. The reredos itself came from St. Christopher of Stocks Church in Threadneedle Street. That was demolished to make way for the Bank of England. The pulpit was actually made for All Hallows Bread Street in the 17th century. And again, it's attributed to Grinling Gibbons. Now, Grinling Gibbons' trademark was the open peapod. And I think we've got...
Yes.
You can see it here. Now, the idea was that if he was paid, the peapod was open. If he hadn't been paid, the peapod was closed. But that begs the question, you know, did he rush back after he'd been paid anywhere and do an open peapod? So, you know...
Yeah, we don't know if that entirely adds up.
But there were a couple of panels that were added after World War II. Can you see the bells? Yeah. Because the bells were badly destroyed when it was bombed in World War II. So you've got that. And you can see the torches, the flames there as well.
And there's like a phoenix coming up as if rising from the flames.
Yes, that's it.
There's a doorway here with a chalice. And
that's right.
There's a lion. And there are skulls. There's a skull.
Skulls there and the little acorns.
A wolf or something. There's an awful lot of detail in this.
Absolutely beautiful. And these are the two newest bits. These were
this pulpit, it seems to be sort of grand and solid, resting on a very delicate looking pillar.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? The pulpits were the most important things because the word was important. The word was now in English. It was being heard in smaller churches by the congregation. And it wasn't everything focused on the altar as it had been in the Catholic tradition. This is the south aisle, and Stephen Dachsbauer sort of covered this off, so it's a little separate area. And what we've got here is some of the silver, and it's in a very firm case. But the goldsmiths paid for this rather beautiful and very firm and very strong and secure case, and so they were able to put some of their treasures back on show. One of the things I'd like to point out, number 19, it's called an Elizabeth I Communion Cup and Platen. And you can see when you look at it that it's totally different to all the other silver. It's very dull, looks as though it's had a hard time. The goblet in particular is a bit wonky, isn't it?
It is.
This communion cup and platen was in regular use here up until and during the Second World War. And it had actually been used at a service on the morning before this church was bombed. And they found it in the ruins after the bombing on the 30th of December 1940. So I think that's a very kind of poignant thing to have here, in amongst all this rather beautiful, you know, shiny, polished
silver. Right. I wouldn't have known that had you not pointed that out.
And the other thing that I love is this over here, number 28. This is a sermon speech timer. Because some priests, I was reading just the other day that John Fox, when he was preaching in St. Giles Cribblegate over in the Barbican, could talk for 2 to 3 hours. So, you know, they had to have some way of controlling them.
Keeping him.
So it looks like a very big egg timer. It's rather beautiful, though, isn't it?
It really is. How funny. And it says it's the time for 1 hour duration.
Yes.
No more than an hour. If you talk more than that, we'll start throwing tomatoes.
Absolutely.
Well, taking a hint from my own editing, and without an egg timer in sight, it's time to sign off on this episode of the City of London Churches podcast series.